is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Well, hello everybody. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County. And so fortunate that Sue Mosbacher, who is in charge of the Master Food Preservers program, and for our four counties, the Master Gardener Program. I want to welcome her back to the show. Hello, Sue.
Hi, Debbie. It's good to be back.
Oh, good, good. And you know what, Sue? I bet with this COVID situation we've been in, has there been an explosion of new people interested in canning food?
There has been. This past year, we've seen a huge increase in the number of people growing their gardens. And then they do well in that. Thank you, Master Gardeners. And then they have all this food. And so they've been preserving a lot. And if there's anybody out there who's, you know, in the last 6 months has tried to find canning jars and canning lids, it's always a scavenger hunt almost for that. But a lot of people are starting to learn how to do it, and they're going all over the place for information. Not all good stuff.
Yeah. I know there's, it's not, after talking to you for a while, it's doesn't seem like it's a horribly difficult process to, okay, to preserve your own food or preserve your harvest or maybe your winter vegetables or anything like that. But there are certain steps that you have to do just to be safe. And if you're not aware of them, that could be a problem.
Yeah, and we have to remember that the whole reason we're doing this, where we can things, probably should be called jar things, but you know, called we use canners and we preserve food in glass jars, it's because we want to make sure that we kill any pathogens in there so they don't grow and they don't create mold and they don't ferment when we don't want them to ferment, and so that they are perfectly safe when we open up the jar later on to eat. And so as UC Master Food Preservers, we teach recommended methods to preserve that you can guarantee that if you've followed the recipes and you followed the procedures and they're all reputable, that you will have a wonderfully safe product when you're done. And so you have to make sure that you use a process that can guarantee you kill any pathogens that could be in your food. And you never know if they're there because you can't see them, smell them, or taste them. There's, you know, bacteria everywhere, and there's lots of good bacteria, but it's the bad bacteria that we don't want growing.
Right. And you know what? I think we've all been spoiled more or less by the improvements the food industry has made, because people don't remember a time when food wasn't safe. They just don't remember it.
Yep.
But there was a time that you had to be really concerned as far as where your food came from, whether it was safe or not. And I know you've got that one example of somebody canning. And
the chickens?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it used to be people would use a boiling water canner for their vegetables. And, you know, the reason that we don't recommend that is because there's one bacteria called Clostridium botulinum, and it needs a moisture environment. It needs room temperature, no air, and a low acid food, which would be vegetables. And if you put them in a canner and you force all the air out, then it's the perfect environment for this bacteria to grow. And if it has any acid, like a pickle or a fruit, it won't grow. And so people would use their boiling water canners for it. And then just to be safe, they would just boil whatever vegetable when they were getting ready to serve it for 10 to 15 to 20 minutes to kill any toxins that could cause botulism. Well, that was just the standard. You always boiled your vegetables, which is why I think a lot of people don't like canned vegetables if they're older, because they always had to boil them for so long. But people don't think about that now. And so, you know, they'll, you know, well, grandma used to do it this way. So I'll, you know, can my green beans in a boiling water canner and then we just eat them. And so you can get sick if you don't realize why things are processed the way that we recommend them.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah.
That is really interesting.
It's funny, I was looking at one of our manuals the other day, and the USDA said that we use a pressure canner to can vegetables because it can get up to 240 degrees and kill the spore that forms around the bacteria that causes botulism. But they said if you use a boiling water canner, you would need to boil it for anywhere between 7 to 11 hours. I'm thinking you wouldn't have food left if you boiled it for that long and you'd keep having to add boiling water. So we use pressure canners for that. But then we still want to make sure that we actually do canning for all of our fruits and our fruits and our salsas and our jams and jellies and things like that.
And while I've got you on the subject, are there some vegetables that are safer to maybe can than others? I mean, where if somebody is kind of thinking, oh, you know, I are feeling somewhat hesitant, put it that way, because they don't want to make a mistake. Are all vegetables the same, or what's your thought on that?
You can can just about any vegetables. Some of them may not turn out really well. There's recipes for canning spinach and greens and things like that. But by the time you cook them, you're going to have kind of a mushy thing. I think those are better frozen if you're going to do that. But for all of our common vegetables, there are recipes. The National Center for Home Food Preservation, their website, they have basic recipes for canning carrots and okra and green peas and dried beans and all kinds of things, artichokes, asparagus, pretty much all of our basic vegetables you can can. So I don't worry about them. I can vegetables a lot and I don't worry about it because I know I'm using a proper canner and I make sure that it works right. And then I follow one of the recipes from the National Center. And so it's safe. So yeah, if you do it right, it's safe. You just wanna make sure that if you're using just vegetables, then you use a pressure canner.
Well, and how long have you been, just kind of curious, how long have you been canning?
Since 2011.
Okay, so it's not all your life.
Oh, no, I started when I joined the Cooperative Extension. I was in management, I was coordinating the programs, and then I thought I should probably find out a little bit more about what they do. And I went through the training and I fell in love with preservation. And I love preserving foods. And it's kind of funny because I just recently cleaned out one of my, the bedrooms in my house. Since the kids have moved out, they've turned into our basements. I needed to go through, and it's like, I have so many canned foods. I have jars of broth and it's like all these soups that I can. It's like, I need to eat all this stuff before I can more. So, because, you know, there's only so much room in my little pantry. It's so I stock things away in other places. But I love making meals where I can pull just about everything from my jarred food.
So, you know, if somebody's new to this, are all the recipes somewhat similar as far as the simplicity? I mean, what is the most simple thing to do?
I think the simplest thing is to can broth. But jams and jellies are really popular, and pickled vegetables are very popular. And pickled vegetables are actually quite easy. Everyone thinks of a pickle as a cucumber, which it is, but you can pickle any vegetable, even some of the fruits. And with pickled vegetables, you just make a little brine and they'll have, you know, your spices and maybe some salt, but it's vinegar. And then you add your vegetables and you put everything in the jar, and the acid in the vinegar acidifies the product. So you can use a boiling water canner or a steam canner, and they're great. I call those gourmet pickles. Personally, I don't can a lot of cucumber pickles because I can buy them fairly cheaply at the store, and I have a harder time finding pickling cucumbers. But I remember pricing one time pickled asparagus in the grocery store, and it's $8 for this little pretty jar. It's like, when I get asparagus in season, I can get it for, you know, $1 a pound, and I can make lots and lots of jars of pickled asparagus, and it's wonderful.
Wow. Wow, that sounds really good. You know, I'm kind of thinking, I know one of the things people used to be scared of, really, and I think actually I still am kind of scared of it, I know I shouldn't be, is the pressure canner. Because, you know, if you remember the horror stories that, you know, grandmothers, parents used to tell about, you know, pressure canning explosions.
And, you know, it was mainly when people would cook with them. And I was actually talking to a coworker years ago, and she said, yeah, we had our canner and boom. So, well, what were you doing? And she said, we were making split pea soup. And I was like, okay. And if you look at the recipes or the instructions for your canners or your pressure cookers, they say when you're making soups, you don't fill it more than like halfway. But people look at these things and it's like, I have all this room, and they fill it up really full. And there's one little vent hole at the top. And if you get a split pea that gets lodged in that little vent, it plugs it up. And then,
that's what happened.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're cooking in it, or because canning, everything's in a jar. So, you know, unless your jar breaks and, you know, a shard of glass goes up there or some food plugs it up, you know, canning is actually a lot easier than cooking in it. But the old style canners, they had all metal parts, and they didn't have the safety features that we have now. There's little rubber gaskets or little rubber safety plugs where, for some reason, the canner did get plugged. When it gets, you know, when the pressure builds up, it'll pop that little safety plug out, and it releases the steam. So the lid is not going to fly off and get lodged into your ceiling. There's multiple safety features built into the current pressure canner. So it's not your problem there.
Okay, so don't worry about that. It's not going to happen.
You just read the manual and follow the instructions and all is well.
Okay. Yeah. So now here's another question. When you were talking about the boiling water canner that you can use for pickled vegetables and jams and jellies, that kind of thing, for anybody that's never seen one, what does that look like? What exactly, I mean, because could you use a deep pot? Does it have to be where it says it's a boiling water canner?
You can use any pot for boiling water canning. The main thing you have to do is have some kind of a rack on the bottom, and it could be a cake rack. It could be one of those heavy duty plastic racks that you put in the microwave. It could be a silicone mat on the bottom, but something that will stay on the bottom and keep the jar off of the heat source and lift it up a little bit so that you've got water underneath the jars, around them, and on top. And it just has to be deep enough so that you have at least an inch of water above it and then space for it to bubble and boil. So you can use any pot. And I've done that a lot of times.
Okay.
But the key thing, Debbie, is that you got to use a pot, because a lot of times people will just, it's called open kettle canning, where they just boil the food, or mainly with jams and jellies. And so they boil it and then they pour it in hot jars, put the lid on, and then they turn the jars upside down to push the air out and create a seal. But remember earlier we talked about the reason we can food is to make sure that we kill all the pathogens. And so you actually have to process it in a canner, like I said, a pot, or you've got a steam canner, pressure canner, whatever is appropriate for what you're canning. But when you do put it in that canner and you boil it, it actually increases the temperature within the jar. So it's hot enough to ensure that you kill any bacteria that could grow. And that way, when you take it out, you've essentially pasteurized it, and you know that nothing's going to grow inside that jar while it's sitting on your counter.
Well, perfect. That's perfect. Now, if somebody has a question, Sue, about any of this, you know, as far as maybe a recipe, or how do they get a hold of the Master Food Preservers?
We have a website, and actually you can go through the statewide website and contact Master Food Preservers in multiple counties, and that's just mfp.ucanr.edu. And it has the links to all of our local sites and all of our local phone numbers and helplines and upcoming classes and things like that.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much, Sue. Really appreciate it. And I really appreciate all the information. We'll have to have you back again.
Sounds good. I always enjoy talking with you.
Same here. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone. This is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for Calaveras and Tuolumne County, And this is Over the Garden Gate. And today I have with me Fran Steen, who is a master gardener for Tuolumne County. Hi, Fran.
Hi, Debbie. How are you?
I'm doing really good. And thank you for returning. This is actually your second visit to the show.
Yes, it is.
Last time we had an interesting conversation about peanuts and other items, but today I'm going to talk to you about some crops that not very many people that I know have grown. And starting off, one of them is loofah sponge. What is that?
That's correct, Debbie. Loofah is a member of the family along with gourds and cucumbers. We think of a sponge as coming from the sea, but there are different types of sponges, and this one comes from a plant. Generally in the U.S., this is used as a exfoliating sponge. In other words, you rub it over your skin. In other countries, and I suspect in the United States too, it's also a cleaning sponge in that you can scrub with it and do anything that you would do where you needed an abrasive type product. As I said, loofah sponges are related to the gourds. And one thing about that family is they require a long, hot growing season.
Do we have it?
Here? We are pushing the limits.
We're pushing the limits.
I'm at 2,500. And if I get my seeds in early May, and they're very viable and sprout right away, I get loofahs on the plant. Oftentimes it's raining and it's winter by the time I take them off the plant to dry them so they have no water in them.
Okay. Wow. Just curious, what do they look like when they're growing? Is that what kind of plant is that?
It's actually an annual, and it's a vine, and they don't like to be on the ground, so that they work very well on trellises. A bean trellis would do the job. I have a little arbor going over a walkway, and I grow them there. They grow very rapidly.
Oh.
And they have a very large, bright green leaf. And when they get ready to flower, the flowers are a single petal type, bright yellow. And they're about the size of a 50-cent piece.
Oh my gosh, they sound really pretty.
It is. It's just a spectacular. You could see my yard from the main road, and people comment on these yellow flowers.
Aww. So it's decorative besides?
It's very decorative.
Oh my gosh. Does a plant look like a squash plant? When you say it's viney, does it somewhat look like that?
You could. You could say that. It looks like a gourd plant, which
okay.
Same family. The leaves are quite large. I can't say it really looks like a squash.
Okay, so it's in the gourd family,
yeah.
and if you've ever grown gourds, that's what, okay. But it sounds so pretty.
Oh, it is. But the interesting thing is when the loofahs, the little fruit, starts to form, and I believe it's from 0 to 8 inches, that is a delicacy in the Oriental food products.
Oh, so you can
you
eat
can
it.
You can eat it, yes.
I didn't realize that.
And of course, it's the bigger that this fruit gets, which oftentimes is, it could probably get up to 3 feet. I'm saying roughly 2 feet. And it's round. I mean, it's not round. It's
kind of like a long oval, maybe?
Yes, perfect. Yes.
Okay.
And then it will dry out, and this is where you start getting the sponge. When this plant with this fruit is dried, and you hope you can dry it on the vine. It's just a lot easier. But I end up picking mine even after rains and putting them in the garage so that they have good air circulation. Another good place is on top of your refrigerator. They dry very rapidly there.
Oh, I bet.
And then you can take that and get the sponge out to use it.
Right. How do you get the sponge out?
Well, that's the fun part. There are, you know, scientific ways of doing it. The easiest way is I put a plastic garbage can liner on my porch, and I take it out there and I stomp on it, and that breaks up the shell. The shell is very brittle.
Oh.
So then you peel the shell off.
Right.
And then you also collect the seeds. The seeds are little black things. And I suppose you could say that this fruit makes a good musical instrument because you can shake it and definitely hear the seeds.
I was really lucky. You gave me some one year and it was phenomenal. You're right. You're absolutely right. When I was shaking it, it actually makes a rattle noise.
Yes, and that's how you know it's dry also.
Okay. And then
then from there you open it up and you have this very fibrous, tough sponge-like. And if you soak it in some Clorox mixture, you can get a white color.
Really?
They really need to be soaked for a while. They seem to have a glutinous
quality to them?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That has to, you have to get that out of there.
Okay. I thought it was just astounding because when I broke open the loofah, which you're right, has a hard, brittle shell, and inside was the sponge. I mean, it was so fascinating, but it looked like exactly like sponges I've seen on the marketplace. When I go to a store, it's the exact same thing. I mean, that's the sponge.
You're correct, yes.
But it's mine. I mean, to me, it's mind-blowing that you can grow it in your garden.
Yes. That's kind of a little known fact. There is a large loofah farm down in Napimo, California.
Okay.
And she sells commercially.
Oh, all right.
And in the southeastern United States, those states produce quite a few loofahs.
Okay. It really is fun. In fact, I'm going to have to try it myself. You talked me into that. It's really different. I also wanted to talk to you about, I understand that you're growing something I have no knowledge about. I don't even think I've ever seen it. And hopefully I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's Yacon, and you mentioned that it's a Peruvian ground apple.
That's correct, Debbie. Yes. This is a first for me. A friend of mine at the farmery in Colombia, the farmer's market, is a seller there. He's from Waterford, and I believe it's Tyson Farms. And he gave me a single, what I call, start. It's actually a little tiny baby potato that's been started, and now it's sprouting and it's green. The leaves are green, and this is going to grow. And it's not known really in this area. It reminds me of a fingerling russet potato, if you could
picture
imagine that. Yes.
Okay.
It's been growing in the Andes for thousands of years, and for all the way from Colombia down to northern Argentina.
Oh my gosh.
It's a relative of the sunflower and the Jerusalem artichoke. And they say if you can grow parsnips or Jerusalem artichoke, you can grow this.
Oh,
I'm at
goodness.
2,500 feet, and I'm going to try mine in a large pot so I can bring it in the wintertime. So it won't go into a hard freeze.
Okay. So it Because potatoes, don't they? I mean, is it in the potato family or kind
no,
of?
So, no,
it, no, it's not.
It's
okay.
A relative of the sunflower.
Oh, relative of the sunflower.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
And you said that. Okay.
It's got a crispness to it, so it's very good in salads. It has a lot of health benefits, and I'm not getting into that because I'm not qualified to talk about those things, but. We're going to see probably a lot of it in the health food stores, in the syrups.
Oh, really?
Syrup is made out of it.
Okay.
It's low calorie.
Okay.
Just a lot of good benefits, they're saying.
But you're also thinking, you know, you're going to use it in, you're going to cook it?
I'm going to eat it.
You're
yes.
going to eat it?
Yes. Yes. And you can eat it raw, and you can do that in a salad with just a little honey or sugar and lemon juice. It's going to turn brown like a potato turns brown after you peel it.
Okay.
You don't necessarily have to peel these. The ones I've seen have not been extremely large, but I understand they can be, by large, I mean maybe 6 inches long.
Okay.
You can also use it in like a fruit salad because it has a crunchy texture. Stir fries, roasted items like vegetables probably, baked. They make tea and syrups or powder out of it.
Talk about versatile.
Yes. And it's, I didn't mention that it's also high in fiber.
Oh, that's always a good thing.
Yes. So what I've done is I'm going to put this in this pot, and I understand that they grow 4 to 5 feet high, each plant. But as in a potato, all the tubers are in the ground.
Okay.
So when the green dies back in the fall, mm-hmm. then I'm going to use a pitchfork and lift it.
Oh.
And there
Very
are
clever.
Two types of tubers. In one are the ones that we will eat, and then up around the crown are small ones that are going to be the seeds for next year.
Okay, so you're going to save that part.
Yes. And I'll
All right.
overwinter that in the garage. If I don't put it back in the pot, I'll put it in some sand just to keep it moist so it doesn't dry out.
Okay. Well, and you're also trying to prevent them from freezing. I mean, you don't want
yeah.
them to freeze.
Yeah.
So, and keeping it dry by putting it in the sand, that kind of thing.
They say they have a long growing season.
What's long?
I believe it's probably around 7 months.
7 months?
Yes, yes.
Wow. That's, boy, you have to be very patient.
Yes, you do. And right now, there's not a lot of information on this plant. But I'm thinking if it's grown in the Andes, you know, there's all temperatures there. Now, I suspect it's not up on top.
Right.
But this is going to be a trial and error, and it's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun.
And I think it's going to be a beautiful plant. It's going to be big. You can use the leaves like you do cabbage or grape leaves to wrap food in.
So the leaves are also edible.
Yeah, evidently.
Oh, my goodness. Which is a lot of times unusual for a variety of plants that
yes,
we eat
is.
As vegetables mm-hmm. is to actually have the leaves also edible, because say for instance the real potatoes you
right.
can't you can't eat those leaves
no
those are
no.
poisonous.
Yes,
in fact even with tomatoes, which are in the same family, you can't eat those leaves.
That's true. Yeah,
so this is kind of unusual. And since you say it's in the sunflower family, does that mean it has a pretty flower?
Well, it's a relative.
A relative, okay.
The flower is not what's amazing about this plant. The flower is quite small, and from what I'm reading, it comes on later after the tubers are formed.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Well, do you mind keeping us informed
oh,
with the
I
process?
Oh, I certainly will. They also say that this plant is not often bothered by pests or diseases.
Oh my goodness.
So that would be a real benefit to all of
us. Yes, that definitely would. And I hate to tell you, Fran, but we're out of time for this segment of the show. I really see you over the garden gate.